Welcome to the show. I'm Jennifer Dudley.
I'm Abby Jorgensen, and this is Fascinating Ordinary, where we get curious about everyday things that are actually amazing.
We're glad you're here with us. Abby, which rabbit hole are we going down today?
Today, we're going down a rabbit hole that Jennifer didn't actually think was going to be interesting. And it's my goal today to convince her and you, our dear listeners, that you are all wrong. And it is actually one of the most fascinating things in the world. Our topic today is sand. So I think it's really important to note that while a lot of the times Jennifer and I are experts in things or know a lot about things, like Jennifer has eaten a lot of cheese in her life. I've helped a lot of people feed little kids in their life, right? We've both read a lot about a lot of the topics that we talk about on this show. Neither of us knows much about sand. Is that fair to say, Jennifer?
That is absolutely fair to say.
Yeah. So like by a lot, like I thought of this topic because I have been thinking a little bit more recently about the sand shortage, which I didn't know was a thing until I heard about it on the radio a few months ago. And Jennifer didn't know it was a thing until I think I told you like a few months.
Yeah, that is exactly right. I learned there is a sand shortage when Abby said, did you know about the sand shortage?
Yes. And so we're going to get into that more. But if you're a sand expert, we're really excited for you to share your wisdom with us as well. So keep in mind, first of all, that I did a lot of this research in the past week and that you can do the same kind of research and then tell us what other things we missed that are amazing about sand. But even given the limited exposure and knowledge that I have about sand, I'm convinced that it's actually incredibly amazing and we all should think about it more. So here we are today.
Yeah, thanks for coming with us on this journey. Before we start, I also want to let everyone know that Abby and I are trying a new setup for the first time where we're not recording in the same room. So while we're working out our sound differences, sound issues, we just want to let you know that if things sound weird or not like they usually do, that's why.
And we're working on it. Okay, so here we are in our new setup. Here we are with our topic that we don't really know, or we didn't really know a whole lot about. I would like to say that I am now an arenophile, but we'll get into what that means in a little while. First, what I want to talk about is what is sand? So Jennifer, what is sand? Like, how would you define sand just from scratch?
Dirt. From scratch, I like. It's like particles. It's like rock pieces that have been broken down so that they're really tiny and there's a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's exactly what it is rock or other kinds of material that have been broken down. And the difference between something like sand and something like dirt, for example, is grain size. So the size of a grain of sand needs to be between gravel. So when you think of gravel, you think of like bigger rocks, right? Mm-hmm. And silt, which is like really, really fine. And so that's something that we would use to make like mud or things like that, right? So there's actual definitions about the size of a grain of sand that matter a lot to certain people. I am not one of those people, so I did not write it all down. But if you Google the size of a grain of sand, you're going to find an incredible array of arguments and points and different stances people have made, hard lines over the years, things like that.
So there's arguments. That means that people disagree about like the definition of sand.
Right. And the reason why is because it really matters. Sand actually shows up a ton in things like law, right? Like what you use for certain, for example, construction materials is regulated by certain laws and provisions. And so you have to know what the size of the thing is. Sand, right? Like in order to say like, oh yeah, you can use sand in this kind of situation, but you can't in this kind of situation, that sort of thing. Also, people who like rocks are just really into classifying things generally as my kind of observation. And so they really appreciate having very defined rules as to what constitute a certain type of rock or a certain size of a grain of sand or things like that. So I think it's about categorization and classification, to be honest. But it has these really big implications for things like laws.
Yeah. Oh, a very long time ago, I worked for an attorney that often did like construction defect lawsuits. And so they had an expert who there's a guy who knows a lot about construction and construction materials, and his His side job, for which I think he made quite a lot of money, was to show up to court and talk about different kinds of concrete. They, and so, like, I guess sand would probably fall into this in terms of, you know, material used to make buildings.
Yeah.
But yeah, I forgot about that entirely. There was a guy that was his whole, that wasn't his whole job. His whole job was like in construction, but he had this very active side hustle, I'm going to call it.
That's really fascinating. So if you want a job in sand, you can get a job in sand and law, apparently. But it does really matter. Like, it makes a lot of sense that he's the one who has to talk about construction defects, especially in regards to sand, because sand makes up the most of concrete by percentage of ingredients. So concrete is really primarily made of sand. So the idea that somebody who works in construction is dealing with sand all the time makes a lot of sense to me. So there we go. We have an actual example of a real human being whose job it is to fight about the legal definitions of sand.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point at which I learned that there are different kinds of concrete was already an interesting one. I didn't realize, even while doing this job, that there were different kinds of sand, or that even that sand was the primary ingredient of concrete.
Right.
But I definitely know that different kinds of concrete can like stand up to different compression weights. Mm-hmm. And so that this is why it mattered for things like, if you were going to build a multi-story parking garage, you would want, you know, a certain kind of concrete that can hold up an entire building on itself. If you use a concrete that isn't strong enough, or that like cracks under certain amounts of pressure, then you have buildings that collapse, and somebody shows up to the lawsuit. You know, this is like multi-million dollar lawsuits because the people use the wrong kind of concrete, which apparently is mostly made of sand. I'm just learning.
So one other definition about sand that does matter here that I want to point out is, how do you know that everything you've got is sand? So do you have someone sit there with a bucket and like pick out each grain and measure it and see, okay, is this silt? Is this gravel? Is this sand? You don't. Spoiler alert, you don't do that. The moral of the story is, if you have a bunch of material, it needs to be 85% sand to be called sand. So you don't have to actually sort out every single bit of gravel, every single bit of silt. If it's 85% sand, it's good to go. So
is that the same in every country for every like person, you know, every person who's selling sand or buying sand?
That's the like thing. That's the number that kept popping up for me in different resources that I was looking at. So I think it's a pretty widely accepted number, but of course I'm looking at articles in English. So that's already limiting me to a certain set of articles about sand, and most of the world's sand being consumed right now is consumed by China. And I cannot speak what I would need to speak or read what I would need to read in order to understand what the numbers would be in China, for example, but 85% seemed to be a pretty standard number in the things I was reading.
Is there a governing body for sand?
There isn't, but there are a lot of people who try to be.
Oh.
And it's, well, not people necessarily, but like organizations, right? And so the idea of using certain metrics is really important with sand, kind of similar to how if you had scientists from the UK and the US working on a rocket together, it'd be really important for them to be sharing which kind of measurements they're using, right? Imperial or metric, for reasons that historically have proven to be very, very important that we share those kinds of information, right? The same thing seems to be true of sand. So with all this in mind, let's say that you have decided, okay, this thing is 85% sand, this bucket that I have. How would you tell me about it? Like, what would you say that would describe sand? What are the other ways of classifying sand, especially like subtypes of sand, not just sand versus silt or gravel or things like that, but what about sand itself and the variety that's there? So Jennifer, have you ever been to a place that had sand that was different than another kind of sand?
Oh, of course. Because different beaches have different sand.
Yeah.
I know like beaches in Hawaii have volcanic sand.
So volcanic sand, so that might be one way that the sand is made that you might look at and classify sand then, right? Did it come mm-hmm. from a river? Did it come from a volcano? Did it come from a big rock that was rolling around? Yeah, so that's one classification. What are other things you've noticed about how sand is different?
Well, sort of within that vein then is the color of the sand.
Yeah. What kinds of colors of sand have you seen?
White, yellow, and black. I'm certain of those. I assume there are other colors of sand, but I haven't seen them.
Yeah, there are. There's one that's really, really rare, apparently, that you can only find on Easter Island that's green.
Hmm.
But there, it's really important to have lots of different like colors of sand, right? And that's because of what kind of rocks are breaking down into that sand. And so, or rock or sediment.
I can say that at my house, we have pink sand, or we had pink sand and blue sand, but it has since been mixed together so that now we have purple sand.
That makes a lot of sense. And when you have toddlers, that does tend to be the way that things go with sand. You can create lots of really cool colors with sand, right? When that's really interesting too, like how do kids classify sand versus us, right? So a kid might see different colors of sand and not think that that's a way that we separate them. We're going to mix them together and make verbal sand, right? Whereas that's the first thing that a lot of adults, I think of when you think, say like, what kinds of sand are there? They immediately go to color, right? There's white sand, there's black sand, there's coral sand, that kind of thing. So there's not an official, because not everybody uses it, but there's a very standard sand classification system when it comes to color that looks at the hue and the value and the chroma. And the chroma means the saturation. So like how deep that particular shade is. So what is the hue? What is the general color? What's the value of that? Like how close toward another color is it? And then how saturated is that color? So if you want to say like, oh, I saw some white sand, it was really cool, you can. And if you want to go into like the full Munsell color system, then you have like letters and numbers and all these things, you can share with someone else exactly the kind of sand that you saw just by color. It's amazing. People have really figured this out.
That is really amazing. And I'm thinking about like if I see a particular color of sand I like, can I figure out how to make it a paint color, figure out what hue it is, and then take that to Sherwin-Williams.
And ask for that one? Probably. I imagine that they can do that. They once took a quilt at Home Depot. I took a quilt I really loved to Home Depot, and they picked the blue off the quilt that I wanted and made me paint from it. So I would
imagine.
Easily bring in sand and ask them to do the same thing. Anyway, it is really cool. And there's so many different amazing colors that nature provides us, let alone toddlers who are mixing together different colors of sand, right? So if you're bored and you're looking for some beauty in your life, Google different colors of sands and just be in awe of the different like kinds of things that you see there. So Jennifer, there are other ways to describe sand than just color, even though color is the one I think, like I said, most adults immediately resonate toward. I have included for you two different links to two different samples of sand. And I'd love for you to open up the first one now and describe it to me in as many ways as you can think of to describe it.
Okay. So I have opened up the link. This is sand sample number 1908 from United States of America. The region is Michigan. The sub-region is Grand Traverse. Is that right?
But yeah, I think that's right. I meant more like, can you look at the picture of the sand and tell me about the sand?
Well, I imagine that those are also important things because they're listed. Yeah, but
I was going to do the big reveal in a minute. They're both there's two types of sand that I've sent Jennifer that are both from Michigan. And
oh, okay.
Yeah, all right. So they're both from the same state. But what do you see when you look at that picture?
I see a lot of different colors. So it's a picture of sand. It's like really, really up close. And so I can see, I don't know, maybe there's like 100 little individual grains. They're not very uniform. There's like little black specks, there's little brown specks, there's little white specks, but overall it's like the color of a popcorn kernel. And
with butter or without butter?
Without butter.
Okay.
I can see what you mean about like one of the classification points you mentioned for color was like saturation.
Yeah.
Chroma. I can see, chroma. So yeah, some of them are definitely more saturated. Like I can't see through the grain. I was going to say kernel. I can't see through the grain. And others look like they're more translucent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. There we go. Any other things that you notice about this sand?
Yeah. It's just a jumble to me, I guess.
Yeah.
It looks like a lot of different, pieces, a lot of different pieces of rock.
Yeah. So there are two other types of categorizations that I want to ask you about specifically. So one of them is geodynamic categorization, which is the knowledge of the process that formed these grains of sand. So that's really hard to know unless you're an expert, especially if you're looking at a sand that you didn't collect yourself or things like that. So I'll just give you the spoiler alert on this. This is probably formed by a river moving rocks around a lot and breaking them down. So that's geodynamically, we went look at the sand and say like, oh, given where it's from and given the processes that I know about that create sand, this is probably coming from a river. The other one is geomorphic categorization. And that means their shape. So what do you see about the shape of these grains of sand, Jennifer?
Like a little bit rounded. They're not perfect circles or anything. And some of them are pretty jagged, but overall the shapes look like oblong or, you know, like rounded squares. Thinking about when you go to get your nails done, they say like, you know, square tip, but rounded.
There we go. There we go. That's a really great description. Okay, awesome. Now, will you open the second sample of sand and tell us about that one?
Yeah. All right. So this is, oh, wow. This is so different. Sand sample number 1,314 from United States of America from Wayne, Michigan. That is so different. The size is the same. So both of them have like...
A ruler.
A ruler. Thank you. Both of them have like a ruler to show you the scale. They're the same scale, but where the first sample had like 100 or more little, not kernels, grains, 100 or more grains in that area. This one has like a couple dozen grains in that same area. This looks just like a riverbed. It looks like there's some, just it's like a collection of pretty big rocks, and they're very clearly different. There, you know, there's gray ones, there's black ones, there's like a couple of white ones. They're all different sizes. They're all different shapes.
Yeah. So there's a lot more variety in the second sample, right, than in the first sample. And the second sample is a lot bigger. You mentioned a lot more colors and a lot of darker colors than you did at the first sample. The shape seems really different in addition to like being bigger, like the actual shape of the grain seems different, right? And then you also noted the geodynamic categorization when you said like it looks like the bottom of a riverbed, right? So this you're probably right. This probably came from a river. And it's really interesting to see like how much variety there is in these two types of sand that both come from like the same general geographic region of the United States, right?
It's interesting. I thought that the first sample was pretty diverse, like, but realizing it has a fairly uniform color, and then, you know, a fairly uniform color and size and not texture, shape, like shape of the grains, you know, all of that, it must have been worn more smoothly.
Yeah.
By, you know, whatever the process is, maybe it was a river. What is really remarkable to me is how quickly I have gotten so good at categorizing sand.
Because you probably never thought about it before now, right?
No, it's true.
Two pictures. And I say like, how are these similar or different? You'll pick up really quickly on the things that people who study sand pick up on, which is things like color, right? Things like shape. If you know things like how they were made. But that does not mean like just because you were able to easily identify differences between these two samples, this does not mean that this is generally easy. So this website is one that we're going to talk about later where I show Jennifer these samples from, and it'll be in the show notes. But one of the things that's on this website also is a sand memory game. You know, memory
Ooh. Games
where you like have cards and you flip them over. So we're going to talk more in a minute about normal sand and what all these things that look so different and look so similar are used for. But before we get into that, I want to get into weird sand, because I think there are a couple of kinds of weird sand, or like sand doing weird things that we've heard about or that we've talked about. And I want to make sure we make space for that. So Jennifer, do you want to lead us off with any weird sands you've heard of? If not, I've got a list.
The weird sand that comes to mind, of course, aside from the pink and blue sand, it's actually magic sand that's at our house.
Yes.
You know, because we like things to be magical here. So aside from that, I would think of quicksand.
Okay. But first I want to do the magic sand thing. So is this like kinetic sand?
Ooh, yeah, it is kinetic sand.
Yeah. Okay. So kinetic sand is not just true sand. to be very clear. So I looked into this because kinetic sand, if you're not familiar, is this type of sand that like reacts kind of strangely when you play with it. And so it's become a really big like children's sensory activity, I guess is the best way to put it, right? And it's really fascinating, really fun to play with. It's one of those children's toys that I like a lot, like Water Wow and kinetic sand are very high on my list of like things I enjoy. And kinetic sand is sand with other chemicals and stuff added into it so that it does the things that it does. So if you're thinking like, ooh, kinetic sand is sand, I'll go look for that on a beach somewhere, I'm sorry to tell you, that's not how it works. You have to go to your local store to pick up kinetic sand.
Well, I thought it was like mineral oil in particular, or that oil, like sand that's soaked in oil or coated in oil, that makes it act that way.
It may be. I do not know, because kinetic sand being not actual sand is outside the scope of this podcast.
Okay.
And I did not look into it. But I trust you. Like, that would make sense to me that it's oil. It's just sand with something else added in. And if it's mineral oil, that makes sense to me, but I cannot. Okay. So kinetic sand, weird sand that's not actually sand. Quicksand, the sand you did bring up that is actually sand. So quicksand is this thing that like, if you step in it, you fall in, and it's really dramatic, right? Can you think of like times you've seen this or encountered this in popular culture?
Well, The Princess Bride is the most famous.
Exactly the one I was thinking of. Yes, this is actually a movie that I've actually seen. So that's probably part of it. Yes. The Princess Bride, spoiler alert, at some point, Buttercup falls through this quicksand, right? And someone has to go save her. I can't actually remember who he is at that point. So
that's okay. Well, then that's less spoiler for whoever.
But someone has to jump into the quicksand to save the princess, who's also not a princess at that point. So
no, now, she's not. Yeah.
The moral of the story is someone falls through quicksand and someone else jumps in to go save them. So quicksand is a real thing. I think sometimes people think it's a dramatic thing that's just in the movies, but it's not. It is actually a real thing. It's sand, but it acts like liquid. So sand is a solid, right? But when you have quicksand, it's acting like a liquid because there's so much water in it that it's saturated. So the best thing I can think of to explain this is think about Jell-O. When Jell-O is in its solid form, like before you put the water in it, you know, like the Jell-O packet, and you like move it around, it's a lot like sand, right? But then if you like put water in it and let it sit for a while, specifically if you put hot water in it and let it sit for a while, the consistency really changes, right?
Yes.
Something similar is happening with quicksand. I am sure there are a bunch of like actual geologists who are groaning right now because not Jell-O may not be the best example, but that is the best thing I can think of. So if you have a lot of sand and then you have a lot of water that fills in all the cracks of that sand, it changes and it starts acting like liquid. So that's why if you were to like step in it or something like that, it would act like a sinkhole. It would just, you would go into it instead of being supported by it like you normally would be, because that water is there. And water is displaced very easily, right? And so you would step into it and then like your foot would sink in. So that's
quick. So, you know, for people who have been on a beach, I guess maybe this would be a good example, is when a wave comes and gets the sand on the beach, like newly, freshly wet, it's really easy to stick your hand into that sand. Because so at that point, it would be saturated, you're saying.
Yeah. So that's when like you leave footprints on the beach, right? Or things like that. It's easier to do that in sand that's just been washed with water than it is with sand that's been dry and sitting on the beach, right? Like it doesn't hold that imprint the same way. Same kind of thing.
All right.
There we go. That's probably
quicksand.
Than Jell-O. That's quicksand. Okay. There are two more that I want to highlight. The first one is sandstorms. Like I think people, right? Like, have you heard about sandstorms before?
Or like dust devils, I guess is the word that I think of.
Yeah. So both of these are actually meteorologically called dust storms.
Okay.
But that's the like correct term for these sorts of phenomenon. And when the air is hotter or cooler, the wind picks up more or less sand and it can create a dust storm. And so that's what like sandstorms, dust storms are. A lot of people think about this happening in the desert. And this is actually really common in places that have a lot of rock and then a little bit of sand on top of it. So a lot of deserts are not actually sand, which is really interesting. And I didn't think about it until I was preparing for this episode, but you're like nodding, you get this.
No, I'm nodding like, wow, this changes everything that I knew about deserts.
Right? They're not actually sand. They're just, well, they have sand often, but they're like sheets of rock. And so one of the reasons why we see so many sandstorms and dust storms in deserts is because there's a bunch of rock that's creating like a solid flat surface and then there's a bunch of sand on top of it. And then if the wind picks up at all, and you have, if you had sand on like a sheet of paper, right, versus like other sand, it's going to move around a lot more. That's why we have more sandstorms, dust storms in areas that have like flat sheets of rock as the primary surface. So the Sahara Desert, for example, doesn't actually have that much sand compared to rock. It's mostly just straight up rock with some sand on top of it.
Wow. I feel lied to by the Sahara.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I didn't expect this either. I didn't know. I think I had learned somewhere that like deserts can be hot or cold. And that was really wild to me that like Antarctica is technically a desert, but the idea that like sand isn't a necessary part of a desert didn't register for me as like a logical next step to Antarctica being a desert. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Sandstorms are something that's really interesting if you're interested in weather. And so if you or your kid are particularly interested in meteorology, definitely look into this. Like there's so much science and so much explanation for like why things happen the way they do. There are different models that you can look at on the internet that will forecast like what different kinds of sandstorms will look like. It's an amazing thing to look at if you're in like some kind of a weather unit for your kid's school, or if you're just like, gosh, that sounds really interesting. I want to learn more, right? One of the most interesting things for me with this is that this happens on Mars. So we can see sandstorms happening on Mars. And because of Mars's atmosphere, which I won't get into too much, happen a lot more and a lot of with a lot of regularity. And so we can watch like sandstorms and dust storms on Mars and learn about how we can protect humans and humans' buildings and animals' buildings and things like that against sandstorms and dust storms, which is really cool. So if you're into space, if you're into meteorology, and you want to learn more about sand, dust storms is where it's at. And, oh yeah, the other one, if you want to learn about like helping people through emergencies, because sandstorms can cause devastation for crops or for people and animals. And so it's really, really important that we get people who are fascinated by this stuff into the science of helping protect us against these kinds of things, especially as the climate is changing, the ways that air fronts are going to be moving and are going to be moving sediment like sand is going to be more and more important to us. So it's a fascinating world. There's so much to learn out there. Go look into it. We're not doing an episode on dust storms, so I'm going to move us on from that.
Wow, that is very cool.
The next one and the last one on my list of weird sands is barking sand. Have you ever heard of this?
I have never heard of barking sand.
Okay, so I'm going to show you a video now. And since we can't actually play the video, you just watch it and then describe. Okay. Start at the like 1 minute mark, because it's just a dude talking about his search for barking sand for a really long time.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Okay. So I just made Jennifer watch this video of barking sand, and we're going to link to it in the show notes if you want to hear what barking sand sounds like. But it's just basically this like weird type of sand in a weird type of wind that combines that even if you like scuff your feet through it, or sometimes just if the wind is going across it, it sounds like barking, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like a little dog, just to be clear, it doesn't sound like a Great Dane barking. It sounds like a Pomeranian barking.
There we go. That's a good description. But it does sound so much like it that this morning when I played that video to make sure that it was still working, my dog Millie reacted very, very strongly. So barking sand is another just type of weird sand. So those are the main ones that I had thought of. Kinetic sand, fixed sand, sandstorms, and barking sand. If you have another type of weird sand that we should think about or know about, please comment or email us, because we would love to learn more about the amazing and strange things that this really ordinary substance does. But now let's talk about like the ordinary things that this ordinary substance does. Like, what do we use sand for? So Jennifer, what do you think of when you think of uses for sand?
Aside from entertaining a child.
Okay, no, let's not like make that an aside.
Oh, okay. All right. That's a whole point. Entertaining a child.
Okay, how so?
Well, arts and crafts projects. I remember doing an arts and crafts project myself when I was younger that involved like gluing sand and seashells onto something.
Okay.
And then, you know, as we talked about before, kinetic sand, I put some kinetic sand down on a sheet pan and let my kid drive his little toy trucks over it and like try to make sand castles and things like that. Obviously going to the beach and building actual sand castles.
Yeah.
The last time we were at the beach, the lake in Michigan, we saw someone building a really cool sandcastle. It was like a preteen or like young teen girl. This wasn't a professional. Well, as far as I know, she doesn't get paid for her work, but she had done a pretty sizable castle that had like many turrets and like a moat and stuff. And I was just like, whoa, girl, this is really cool.
It's amazing what people can do. When we went to Spain with my family earlier this year, my sister-in-law and I were walking along the boardwalk, and he saw somebody who had done like an entire giant turtle in the sand, like carved out every different like little groove in the shell, like everything was this huge turtle. And then he had done a crucifix that had just incredible detail, like all this stuff. Like, people really are incredible with their art. So the first thing I thought of when I thought of this is like, what is the sand castle competition of the world?
Oh yeah.
I just immediately thought there had to be one. Guess what? There isn't. So if you're bored and you want to start something, this seems like an area that really could work. I will note, there was a US competition that ran for a while, but it shut down because of lack of resources and volunteers, was what the website said, and hasn't been like, it hasn't happened since like 2011 or something like that. So there are a lot of regional competitions. There are also sand art competitions, which are different than sand castle building competitions. Those seem to happen with a little bit more regularity, but there also doesn't seem to be like one general, you know, the Olympics of sand art or the Olympics of sand castle building. So I will say, though, if you're bored, look up some of these different competitions, maybe even in your town, and just get a sense of what people can do with this incredible material. Like, taking sand, which is something that's so ordinary, that so many of us take for granted, and making it in granite, get it? And making it into like this beautiful, amazing work of art that's so temporary and so fleeting. Like, there's something just gorgeous about that, that I really encourage you to look into. So sand art, sand castles, not just for kids, also not really like an Olympic sport. That's more in the middle of those two things. Okay, so what other uses might there be for sand?
Manufacturing, I assume. I mean, we talked about concrete, but also silica, which I think is a kind of sand or like a part of sand.
Yeah. So silicon, at least, is made up of quartz sand. And quartz sand is a specific type of sand that's just made of quartz and can't be made of much other stuff. So this is really, really common. Like, you're probably listening to this podcast using quartz sand, because most electronics, if not all, use a silicon chip that relies on quartz sand in order to be manufactured. So that idea of like that, that's a really common part of our everyday lives, our electronics especially. Yeah, that's a great one. Other ideas come to mind?
Well, my husband is a golfer, so I'm going to say sand traps.
Yes. Yeah. So golf courses actually use a ton of sand, both for sand pits, which makes a lot of sense, right? It's like the timeout of golf, for those of you who don't understand golf. Like, if you make a shot but you don't make it right, you can end up in a sand pit. It's my like non-golfer understanding. I took golf as my PE course in high school. Did I ever tell you this?
No.
Because I was homeschooled and we had to like account for a number of hours for each credit, and I hated everything physical. Like, I did not want to do a sport at all. I was very much a speech and debate type of gal, and so I had to get like a certain number of hours. I can't remember if it was like 60 or 90 in the course of a semester or something like that of physical education. And so I learned golf.
That's a very Rory Gilmore thing to do.
I guess it was, actually, now looking back at it. I am not good at golf. I'm really actually very, very bad at golf, but I do understand things like sand pits are the timeout of golf, in like the toddler sense of the term timeout, not the like sports sense of the word timeout. Okay. So golf courses use a ton of sand for sand pits, but actually they also sand the greens fairly regularly. So you may have someday, if you are a golfer, shown up to your local golf course and it turns out there's sand all over the green. Like, the green is where you start kind of your golfing at a particular hole. And this is for the same reason that people aerate golf courses or aerate like sports fields or things like that. It helps break down the different root structures that might be starting to form. And so that makes the turf a little bit easier to play sports on. So that's why you wouldn't necessarily like sand your front yard, but you might sand a football field, or you might sand, actually, I didn't see anything about sanding a football field, just aerating them, but you might sand a golf course. And I think part of the reason that golf courses use sand for that is they're already using it for sand pits. So actually, things like landscaping take a ton of sand and are not something we always think about. Mm-hmm. Any other ideas for uses of sand?
Volleyball. So I guess that's more sports.
Yeah, exactly. And so volleyball is played in a pit of sand, right? You need that for that. Okay, I'm going to tell you my other things on my list. Mm-hmm. Sand used to be used for abrasion for things like sandpaper. Now sandpaper doesn't use sand because of the sand shortage, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. I know, right? I felt kind of lied to you too. That's
what does it use?
It uses, I can't remember if it's garnet. I think it's garnet and like manufactured substances instead of sand. And those are easier to control because you can control more, like if you're creating it yourself or if you're figuring out other stuff, you can use hardier things. And like garnet is really hard. Or you could like manufacture something that's going to be really durable. So sandpaper isn't sandpaper anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
I know, right? So it used to be used for abrasion and now that's really out of style. It also used to be used in air filtration. So like gas masks used to use sand as the way to filter air. And now we use microfibers for the most part. So we don't really use it for that anymore. But there are also other things that we have used sand for forever that we still use sand for. Things like agriculture. So sand is really easy to drain because of how it lets water through, right? It's really easy to dig because of how small the particles are and how they hang together. And it's also less susceptible to bacterial and fungal diseases, according to the Gardening Channel, which had a really good article that is in the show notes. So things like carrots and potatoes and lettuce and watermelon, all these different types of foods that are really susceptible to bacterial or fungal diseases are actually easier to grow in sandy sorts of like soil. I always thought sandy soil was bad for gardening, but it turns out that's just if it's super, super sandy. And some of these things are actually way easier to grow in sand. Other uses for sand include filtering water, keeping fish, making artificial reefs and artificial islands, keeping beaches that were eroding to make sure that they don't erode as quickly, making paint. Apparently there's textured paint. I cannot for the life of me figure out if I've ever seen textured paint, but apparently textured paint put sand, like there's sand in it, and then that makes the texture. Do you know what they're talking about with this?
I am thinking about you would have a textured ceiling, like popcorn ceilings.
Yeah, we're back to popcorn again. I didn't think popcorn was going to be so heavily in a podcast about sand, but here we are.
But like maybe not specifically the popcorn ceiling, but I know there's a lot of different kinds of textured ceiling. Like that's not the only one. In this room, there's a textured ceiling, but it's not popcorn. It's something else. But
I don't know. It may have used sand. I was very unclear on this. And frankly, it wasn't the most interesting thing I learned about sand. Not spend a whole lot of time on it. But apparently paint uses sand too. This next one is one that I, as somebody who grew up in Minnesota, knew all the time. It gives vehicles traction on ice. Is this something you ever encountered, Jennifer?
We bought kitty litter for that when we moved here.
Well, I tell everyone to use kitty litter because it's way easier to buy kitty litter and it doesn't contribute to the sand shortage, which apparently we're having. But also kitty litter is like more easily stored in your car, right? And it's lighter often too. So kitty litter is great. Pro tip, if you're stuck on ice and like you get into a ditch and you can't get out or things like that, pull the kitty litter out of your trunk that you will have put there once you heard this podcast episode. Throw some kitty litter in the like right up in front of and right behind each of the tires, like exactly where they're hitting the ice, the snow, and then you can drive away. It's amazing. I have done it so many times as like even as a high schooler who I once slid off the road into a ditch because of the ice in Minnesota, and I got myself out by myself, like out of a ditch because all you need is kitty litter if it's ice. If there's other stuff going on, don't just rely on kitty litter, like call a tow truck. But I didn't need to because I had kitty litter and it was a situation that just required that. So things like sand can give vehicles traction on ice. Mm. Use kitty litter instead of sand if you're looking to do this yourself. One other thing that I found really interesting that anyone who is into trains might really appreciate is that apparently sand is used to give trains tractions on rails too. So it's not just vehicles on ice. It's also vehicles on rails, which is pretty cool. I could not find
it. Regular conditions, like any condition, or is it like if they get stuck? If
you're worried about it, kind of a thing. Then it can give trains tractions on rails. I assume for the same reason it gives vehicles traction on ice.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. One other protective form of sand that can save lives is sandbags, right? Which can be created and used to protect us from gunfire, from water, things like that. And that's because sand is a lot harder to get things like a bullet or things like a lot of water through than air is, right? So the idea of making sandbags and putting them up around your house if you're worried about a flood or something like that comes from the properties of sand in the way that it can protect us, which I think is really amazing and interesting as well. And then we've talked a little bit about recreational uses for sand, like sand sculpting. There are other things like buggying, climbing sand is a thing. Biking in sand is a thing. Art in sand is a thing too. There are rituals, especially for the ceremonial cleansing of the body, from a lot of different cultures that use sand. There's also a type of therapy called sand tray therapy. It's a type of play therapy influenced by Buddhist practice and art therapy. So it's used for problems with self-esteem, aggression, focus, and a lot more. If you're interested in this, Sand Play Therapists of America has a website, a whole bunch of info, a journal, they edit everything. I went way down that rabbit hole. Some animals actually use sand, and not just as their habitat, but as part of their structure. So some coral will like take sand that's floating by and make it part of their skeleton, which is really cool. And wow. That's one of the reasons why we're worried about those little critters if the sand shortage gets too bad, because they need that sand in order to like grow and create their new next body. And last use of sand that I found is it's a great pickup line setup.
Ooh.
Seeing this in Star Wars. Do you remember this moment in Star Wars? Okay, where Anakin's like, I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating and it gets everywhere. Not like here. And then he like reaches out and touches her hand. He's like, here, everything is soft and smooth. So if you need a good pickup line, sand is apparently one of those too.
But don't take your pickup lines from Anakin.
I don't know. I think that depends on who you're trying to pick up.
I suppose.
If Rasmus tried to use that on me, it'd probably work. But you know, I already really love him, so maybe he's
here. I don't know. I mean, I get like spoiler, if somehow this fact has escaped, like if somehow you have managed to escape the knowledge that Anakin is Darth Vader, I'm really sorry to be the one to spoil that for you, but I just don't know if I want to take my pickup lines from Darth Vader.
But this is before he's Darth Vader.
I guess we'll give him that, but you know.
We need to table the discussion of how good or bad Anakin is before he becomes Darth Vader, because I have thoughts on this.
All right.
But this cannot be what we talk about right now.
Yeah. We should do an episode about fandom.
That would be a really good one. Okay. So sand can be used for a lot of things, even if you don't want to use it as a pickup line. It's used in all these different things. Glass is just melted sand. Concrete is mostly sand. All these things that we interact with on a daily basis, these things we love, these things we do, these things we use for our health, lots of them have to do with sand, right? And I hope I've convinced you at some some modicum of entertainment here, Jennifer, that this is actually really interesting. Like the ways that sand works are actually really interesting. The ways that sand is. But we have another problem that I want to bring up. Which is that we should actually be kind of worried about sand. So sand is a non-renewable resource, at least as far as our lifetimes are concerned. It is really hard to make sand. If something is going to erode into sand, that takes a very, very long time. And sand isn't something that we've gotten really good at just mass reproducing for something like concrete or glass.
Mm.
Sand comes from eroded sediment, from rocks, like we've talked about. And there's just, erosion only happens so fast. Right. And this is one of the weird cases where maybe we kind of want erosion to happen faster because we need more sand. But then if erosion happens faster, what happens to our ecosystem? Right. All these different problems come up. And it's not like we can just keep going out and getting more sand, which is what we've been doing for a long time. So sources of sand people think about are deserts. Mm-hmm. Deserts are mostly sand, like we talked about. And also you can't use desert sand for concrete because of its properties. And if you want to know more about that, you can talk to Jennifer's colleague from the
yeah, that's right.
Knew a lot of stuff about that, right? But the moral of the story is you can't use desert sand for concrete.
Are glass and concrete recyclable?
Kind of, but like not really. So think about if you had a block of concrete and you wanted to get that sand back out. From what I understand, that's possible. But think of how much has to happen and how much energy has to be used to take a block of concrete and turn it back into sand. Like that's a lot of erosion that has to happen then, right? And sometimes we mix it with other stuff that's really harmful to release out into the environment while we do that. So something like glass, something like concrete, like we could get usable resources back out of those, but it takes a while. So that is one of the alternatives that they're looking into, is like recycling more materials. But there are some concerns that we still have to figure out before that becomes a feasible path forward. So first, before we get into the other sorts of alternative paths we could take, let me tell you a little bit more about the current problem. The other sources of sand we have are beaches. And so beach mining is a thing where companies will come in and just take all the sand from a beach and use it for something like concrete.
My understanding, there's at least one island nation that is shrinking because they're selling off all of the sand on their beach. And so the island itself is just getting smaller.
Wow. Do you know which one that is?
Oh, I do not remember. I learned about it a long time ago and then didn't think anything of it after that.
Yeah. But that's wild. Like that's what they have to sell. That,
exactly. Yeah. It's the resource that they have to offer so that they have an export.
Yeah.
But every time they sell it, their country, their nation gets smaller.
And this is a reason actually why, like, because it's non-replaceable in our lifetimes, this is why some countries have banned the export of sand. Where like all the sand in our country just has to stay in our country, which is really fascinating. So we use 50 billion tons of sand every year for construction. And we're not going to be able to keep getting that from things like beaches. There's marine sand and ocean sand. Sometimes this is good for stuff and sometimes it isn't, that we use it for in construction in particular. Usually we get the sand that we have for construction from rivers, but you think about like how long it takes a river to turn one rock into like a handful of sand, right? It's a problem. We're running low. And so there is a Popular Mechanics article we have in the show notes that talks about how sand is the most extracted solid material in the world. And it is the second most used global resource to water.
Wow.
I saw a different article that said that it's the third most used global resource to water and air. So it really depends on if you're counting air as a resource that we're using or not. But the idea that like sand is something we're using at a really, really fast rate is important to understand. Did you know that that's how used sand is in our world?
I had no idea, but it absolutely makes sense when you think about like the way our entire like globe is set up is on this extraction method, that we take resources from the earth and we consume them. We create things like buildings. We're constantly making new cities. Our society, like North American society and the rest of the global North, rely on constant expansion.
Yeah.
And those resources come from somewhere. So learning this it's one of those things that's not surprising to learn. I didn't know it, but hearing it fits in with everything I know about the way we operate.
Yeah. And this is getting to the point where things are really serious. Like we're pulling up farmland for more sand. So we're going to have less food in the future because of this. Organized crime is getting really involved with sand mining. Like that's the level we're at. I know. There's an NPR article in the show notes about this. I will say, I really hope the FBI doesn't go through my search history recently. There's a lot of stuff trying to figure this out. There's not a whole lot out there. Like there's a lot of people, journalists who I trust and respect, saying organized crime is involved with sand mining. And there's not a whole lot other than that. Like, I think they're so involved with it that we don't know what's going on.
You know, I could imagine anywhere where there's money to be made, but regulations get in the way, someone is willing to go through the back door, like the illicit routes to obtain that resource. The same thing is happening in the Amazon right now, where people are doing illegal logging and someone is buying that product because there's a market for it.
Yeah. So this is a huge problem. Like people are really trying to steal this resource, and this resource, even without stealing, being a part of it, is going away at a very fast rate. And so we need more people to come up with alternative ways to create buildings than just concrete. But also there's some really fascinating work being done right now about using crushed rock, recycling construction leftovers, and using this one thing that's a byproduct from mining as a substitute for sand. And so there's some amazing stuff happening here. So even though it is scary to think about what happens when, not if, when we run out of the second most used resource in the globe, or third, if you count air, what happens when we run out of that? The amazing thing is there are some brilliant humans who are working on this. And if you're interested in it, you should totally look them up, encourage them, send them an email, like learn more about what the things are that we're doing to deal with the sand shortage, and especially in construction. Like that's really what it comes down to, I think, in my understanding, is that like construction is the thing that we need to worry about. So it's really cool. And if you're interested in it, you should definitely go learn more. But let's say you're not interested in the shortage so much. Like there's a lot of problems to think about in the world. And I understand if that's not another one you need to add to your plate right now. Like not all of us can worry about everything. Not all of us can solve every problem, right? You're supposed to solve the problem that's in front of you sometimes. And sometimes the problem that's in front of you is that you are just curious about things. So let's say you're curious about sand. You can collect sand. So this becomes that you if you collect sand, you become an arenophile or a samophile, which is someone who collects sand. I have no idea if I'm saying those right because they're not in the dictionary. And so there's not a pronunciation guide. But in order to do this, let me introduce you to Daniel Helber. So Daniel Helber is the person whose website, www.sand.world, is the website that Jennifer used earlier to look at the two different samples of sand that I introduced her to earlier. So Jennifer, I'm going to send you the link to that website again. And I want you to just give me an overall impression of what you see there.
All right. I'm going to sand.world. All right. So welcome to the International Sand Collection of Daniel Helber. In my online sand collection, you will find about 7,600 sand samples from more than 250 countries and 9 meteorites, with all 193 member states of the United Nations. Ooh.
This is amazing. So this guy just really likes sand. And there's a lot of these people out on the internet. I really like this particular website because it has a lot of accessible things for you to stay at home and fall in love with sand. Whereas a lot of the other ones, you'd have to like go places or do things. So this is a great like from home kind of website to start with. But basically you can go on Helber's website and just see all these different sands from all over the world. And in fact, you can even send him your sand from like your backyard if you want there to be a sample. So Jennifer, he does not have a sample from Indiana. So one of
what?
One of us should send him a sample from Indiana. But he will like trade sand samples with you if he has one that you want and you have one that he wants, kind of thing. He just seems like this guy who really cares about sand and really wants other people to be able to fall in love with sand too. So a couple interesting things about collecting sand and sharing it. The standard way to trade sand is in like an old Kodak film container. So you need to have that kind of film container full of sand. And that is like one unit that you can trade. So a lot of times people will be really strong in their feelings about like, you don't pay for sand. You should never pay for sand. It's like an honor code kind of thing for lots of sand collectors. So you should trade them if you want to, or you should give them, but you shouldn't buy them. That's kind of cheating. That just means that like then the rich people get the sand. And that's what sand collecting is about. Sand collecting is about getting to see the incredible diversity in the types of sand that there are around the world.
I'm curious
around your neighborhood.
I'm curious if there's a reason to use the Kodak film canister. Is it because it's opaque, or is it because of the size and like, you know, ability to pop off the top?
My understanding is honestly that this was like what started when people started really getting into sand collecting, was just everyone had a lot of those containers around and for an easy standard unit. So instead of having to say like sand might weigh something different, right? Or sand might have a different kind of like how many grains per square inch or things like that. Like those might be different. And so this was a standard way to say like, this is one unit of sand.
Okay.
It's something that everyone had access to. So now like people have to go find these because obviously those are not
who has one
common anymore. But that's very standard in the sand collecting world. But you don't have to have those to be a sand collector, right? And so part of the beauty of the world of sand collecting that I have found out in the last couple of weeks preparing for this episode is that you can just do whatever you want and be amazed. Like you could collect sand from your house, and then you can ask your neighbor if you can collect sand from their house. And then you can go down to like the public park and collect sand from there and look at the three things that you have. And they're going to be incredibly different. Like there's going to be so much diversity in this, and that's amazing. Like just getting into, we use this resource for so much stuff without even thinking about it. When we look at this, it's incredible what goes into this. It's incredible what sand can do. And it's beautiful how different it is. So another great resource, if you're interested in learning more about this, is called the International Sand Collectors Society. It publishes a periodical, which is called the Sand Paper. Makes me really, really happy.
Which I've heard is outdated.
Yes, it's made out of garnet and or aluminum oxide. But The sandpaper is their like periodical. They also have a really helpful glossary online. So if you're like, okay, let's get into sand collecting, what are the words I need to know? That glossary is a great place to start. There's also an intro on how to become a sand collector. And it like really spoke to me and to, I think, the vision of this show. So I am going to ask you, Jennifer, to read from the International Sand Collector Society a little bit of slightly edited because of some ableist language, language from the International Sand Collection Society about what sand collecting is like.
Anyone can become a sand collector. Children to seniors have enjoyed this pastime for many years. There is, however, one important factor in becoming a samophile. I didn't realize there was a P in that word. Well, I knew there would be a P in the file part, but
yeah, it starts with a P.
Yeah. P-S-A-M-M-O-P-H-I-L-E, which definitely threw me off. Anyway, one important factor in becoming a samophile, and that is the ability to observe and wonder. This is key. One must learn how to look closely at not only sand, but of the surrounding area in which one is collecting. Whether a beach, lake, river, desert, etc., the surrounding area will tell you much about the sand beneath your feet and how it got there. One of the myths about sand collecting is that once you have collected a sample from a given area, there's no need to look further, as all sand will be exactly the same. Not true. Often, one will discover that sand can be quite different sample to sample within just a few yards or even feet of each other. So it's very important to observe and wonder. Well, that's nice.
Isn't it? I really love this. The idea that we can take something that's so normal and so everyday and just witness the beauty and think about like everything that went into that little Kodak container or Ziploc bag or whatever it is you have of sand. Like think about all the years that some very persistent river spent breaking down a very, very strong rock to make this incredible material that we use in everything from our drinking glasses to our cell phones. And it's just there, and it's so different, and it's so varied, and it's so beautiful. And that idea that we can observe and wonder, and that that's the premise of sand collecting, makes me kind of want to be a sand collector. I have a lot of hobbies, so I don't know that I can bring that one on, but the idea of witnessing the beauty in the everyday is just so cool, and I love it. So if you love it too, go to sandcollectors.org and become a sand collector. And on that note, I'm going to close this out by asking Jennifer to read the section of sandcollectors.org that is called Sand Humor. I just got a couple of these, my favorites. Yeah, Jennifer's face right now. You're so excited. this is a couple of the selections from that, and we're going to close you out with that. But before we do, I just want to thank you all for listening and entering into what I think is an amazingly fascinating world of sand. Jennifer, I hope I've convinced you that this was actually a fascinating topic for our show today. It's an incredible world, and I really love sharing it with you.
Yeah, I'm sold. Sand is pretty cool. I hope you all think so too. If you want to talk to us more about sand or other kinds of rocks or natural resources or weathering processes, you can do so on our Instagram, Facebook page, our website. If you want to support us as we dive into these topics, you can do so on Patreon. But yeah, even if you don't, just keep listening. We really appreciate having you here.
Yeah. You might be a sand collector if, Jennifer, take us away.
All right. You might be a sand collector if you aren't surprised when your peanut butter and jelly tastes a little gritty. Ew. You were disappointed when you saw true grit and it wasn't about sand. Yeah, I would assume there's some grit in there.
Is that right?
You know what a scupula is.
Okay, I didn't know, so I Googled it. So all of you can know too. A scupula is a scooping utensil that's used for transferring solids. It looks a lot like a metal straw, like a big metal straw that's cut in half. Scoopula is the brand name of that thing, kind of like Kleenex is a brand name of tissue. So now you are a sand collector because you know what a scoopula is. So you might be a sand collector if.
You might be a sand collector if you get your sand calendar and the first thing you do is flip through to see if any of your sands made the cut.
So first of all, I love that you get a sand calendar.
Yeah. How do I get a sand calendar? I guess I have to be a sand collector.
Yep, exactly. And then like your sands might be included, which is pretty cool. All right. Final one. Here we go.
You might be a sand collector if even people who collect bird droppings think you're weird.
Well, there are people who collect bird droppings.
I just learned there are people who collect bird droppings. Oh, God.
Yeah, for our next episode.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So I'm going to send the link to you in a minute, Jennifer, but I will say first, this is the easiest difficulty level. And it took me 1 minute and 21 seconds to match the sand because it's actually really hard for me to remember sand because it does all look really similar. So now that we've highlighted some of the differences, I want to see if you struggled as much with dealing with all the similarities as I did. And we're going to time you. You ready?
Okay.
Okay, here we go. So there's the link. It'll time you on the website for you. So go ahead and do the sand memory game.
All right. Click the link.
And feel free to talk us through it.
Okay. Those two are different. So there's a 4x4 grid.
Just like every memory game.
Yeah.
Flipping over the cards right now to look at the different types of sand. Each one has a match.
Sorry, I'm like trying to focus on the game because you told me that it's timing me and it's very important to me that I do well. Ooh, there we go.
You got one?
All right. Oh, I've gotten several. I'm really good at this.
Okay, there you go.
I don't know if I'm really good. I have nothing to compare it to. I mean, I have yours and we'll talk about that, but yay, 51 seconds.
51 seconds, nice.
Wow, it says Sihaben Esin 51 Geschaft.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, so the website is primarily in German. I should have mentioned.
Okay.